Spiritual Life Center. Transforming lives as we love, serve, and remember who we are.
One heart.
One heart.
We greet you in the name of all that is good, all that is sacred, and in the warm and loving energy of this community, Spiritual Life Center. If you're joining us for the first time, we especially want to welcome you because we know that you are not here by accident. You're here by divine appointment. Thank you for joining us on your unique path today, and we hope you enjoy this special message from this past Sunday's service.
Well, welcome to our sixth week of Faith in Action, based on Brené Brown's book, The Gifts of Imperfection. As I was thinking about what to share this week about her thoughts on working to exhaustion and calmness and stillness, I hearkened back to the time that I was in college, and there was a classmate. He was very, very bright. He did very well. He was one of those individuals that, you know, graduated magna cum laude. It's like the top of the class. And, you know, I was nowhere near that. I was more like, thank you, Lordy. Thank you, for Lordy, for getting me out of here, getting me through. And so I thought I'd follow his lead, you know, during, you know, what we used to call the reading period, just before exams, you know, where you go to the library and you study a lot, you know, just to get ready. And I said, well, I'm just going to try to keep up with him step for step. So I'd go in, and, you know, he'd be in the library before breakfast, you know, and I said, okay, I'm going to get there, I'm going to be there. And I stay there for a couple hours. It was breakfast time, and he'd still be there. I go to breakfast, I come back, and he's still there. And then I hang with him till lunchtime, and I said, man, does he eat? Because I got to go eat some lunch. And I'd go eat lunch, and he'd come back, and man, he was still there. Then I come back after lunch, and he's still there, and I'm trying to hang with him moment for moment, dinner time. And then he never left, and I said, man, did this guy ever eat? So I did that for a few days and realized I couldn't keep up with him. But he worked really, really hard. But he was never saw him smile. And he graduated like in 3 years, and I think he went to graduate school and finished that early. And I didn't see him again, of course, until like 15 years later, one of our reunions. And he had gotten completely out of his field. He decided that he was going to just stop what he was doing, where he was working these 100 hours a week, and buy him a little vineyard up in upstate New York and just produce wine and artwork. And he realized that. Because I used to say to him from time to time, I said, man, even God took off after 6 days of creating the universe. You know, though it's not really true, but, you know, I'm just trying to get him to lighten up a little bit. But over time, he realized that it was not about working by the sweat of your brow. And I think he received that message at some point. He got it. And he realized that he could create a new definition of what success was for him. And he stopped buying into the idea that he had to work himself to exhaustion in order to prove his worth. He had a revelation. It was something that was coming to him that says there's something more to life that you don't need in order to establish your status or your worthiness. And I think all of us have this calling within us that's saying, at some point, we may say, come on out and play. There's a calling that's coming to us. I remember one time I used to have an office, and I had some plants, real plants, not fake plants. And it was like right near where the window was. It had a big plain guy, a little window that had glass that the sunshine came through. Okay, anyway, I'm trying to keep it up. And it wasn't right in the path of the sun. It was like to the side. And I remember I used to go by there, and every once in a while I would see the plants leaning over trying to get some of the sun. And I think the universe is calling us to lean into that joy that's always there for us. You know, Brene Brown says that there's a yearning, a calling. It is something that she calls wholehearted living people have in order to live from a sense of worthiness. And she said that yearning is that sense of play, which is the core of creativity, the core of our innovation. You know, this being a Veterans Day weekend, I remember reading a while back about in ancient times there was a leader of his army. And he would recruit people to come part of his army. But he said he would only bring people into his army who knew how to sing and knew how to dance. He seemed to think that they would make better soldiers by being part of his platoon. Because I think we realize that if we look at the work of Brene this week, that we're not just here to materialize and to produce and work by the sweat of our brow in order to prove to the world how worthy we are. Brene says that wholehearted living people engage in creative play and creative rest. And they do it for no reason at all, just for the heck of it. They don't have to have a purpose. You know, I had a teacher one time, that spiritual teacher said that the enlightened work from their rest. In other words, the enlightened rest, literally work from their rest. You know, they work, and then they rest. But he said, I got it backwards. Back up, James. Back this thing up. He said, the unenlightened rest from their work. In other words, they work, and then they rest. But he said, the enlightened work from their rest. In other words, they begin to get into that playful mode first. They connect to their meditation first. They lay that as the foundation first. And then they go out and do the work. I think there's something here that's always seeking to be expressed. I often believe that, you know, depression that we may have from time to time is a result of not expressing the creative play that is within us. You know, I've been sharing throughout this series that when I was in this rehab center called Concept House, that I used to set aside a time that, you know, after we had gotten serious about our recovery and groups and sharing, which can be a lot of work, it can be exhausting, they created a time for creative play where people would come out and they would maybe do some poetry, or they may do some singing, or they may be an artist, or they may dance. And so everybody had to do it. It was not an option. And so I recall, I said, I don't really know what to do, but I decided, well, I'm going to do some stand-up comedy. And I remember one time, you know, when you're there, you don't have a lot of distractions. You know, not a lot of music or TV. You know, every once in a while, I play foosball. That was in the old days, no video games. And I remember just watching all the events that took place at the center. And one of the jobs that we used to have, we used to have to walk around at night just to protect the property, because we were in a kind of a bad area. And then what they would do, they would give everybody a baseball bat when they were on duty, as if that was going to scare somebody off. And so I'm walking around doing my duty that night, and I remember I saw a possum out in the yard. And the possum was right next to some barbells and some weights. And, you know, the possum was there looking at me, and I was looking at him. He was looking at me, looking at him. And, you know, I could hear him saying to me in so many words, "What you gonna do with that bat?" I took two steps toward that sucker. Next thing I know, he grabbed the barbell, started doing some lifts, about 150 pounds each. And I said, "Hey, man, I'm gonna back on up." But I took some of the things that were happening in the community just to share with them, you know, a creative way just to lighten the load, so to speak. And I expressed a part of me I didn't know was there. I think when we engage in play and creativity, it moves us from working until we're exhausted just for lifestyle, just for status, into wholehearted living that Brene talks about. And there's some great qualities that we want to bring out of play and rest that sometimes are pushed into the background. It seems as though individuals sometimes on a feverish pitch to see how can out-exhaust the other person, to have more, to get more. C- coming from a consciousness of saying that we have to get more materialism, particularly in this world, in the Western world. I think what seems to be falling behind are the basic qualities like rest and creativity and play. You know, I had another classmate who was in contact with me, who was in Silicon Valley, you know, the technology capital of the world, in another place where extreme examples of engaging in overwork. And that, for many of them, it was a badge of honor. Who could stay there? Because they have like sleeping bags in their places. They're staying overnight, working all kinds of hours. But he seems to say that the tide is turning. We can see where many of them realize that that's counterproductive. And they have times where people can go for mindfulness, meditation, and yoga, and all of those things. Because what it does, it begets energy when we do these things. It does not consume more energy. So one of the things that we can understand that we have to have that into our life experiences. One of the things I realize is that when you look at all of those hours and working, it's because some people think that they have to work so hard for a living. You know, I heard something earlier. I can't remember who it was saying. Oh, it might have been Garland. He was talking about sometimes when you chase after something, what happens is that you actually chase it away. And so sometimes I think about when it comes to working excessively hard, that a lot of people think they need to do that in order to survive in the world, but scientifically in the physical realm, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And if we try to really work hard for something in the physical life, sometimes we get the opposite. In the mental realm, if we run after something we believe that we do not have, we ultimately chase it away. Similarly, if we try to get rid of something that we don't like, it persists. What we resist persists. So on the physical and medical plane, mental plane, what we get an equal and opposite reaction. In the mental and physical realm, the harder we work, sometimes the harder it is. I've been thinking about like an athlete at times when they said they're at their best when they're relaxed. And they're able to do their best when they're not trying to make it happen, but they're just getting into a flow of relaxation. And I think when we interject rest and play and creativity in our daily living, there is no opposite reaction. You know, Brené says in her book, sometimes we just have to say no, to buck the system. Take something off your to-do list. In fact, I say sometimes you got to have a not to-do list. This is I'm not going to do. And so you put your not to-do list, and then on your list, take a nap from time to time. I do that every once in a while. It really makes a big difference. You know, Brené talks about this week, the importance of cultivating a wholehearted living or living from that sense of worthiness. And in order to do that, we have to let go of anxiety as a lifestyle. Some of you may know, but years ago, you know, I practiced law in Florida and I did some criminal defense work. And earlier in my career, I was representing a young teenage client who was charged with like 8 serious felonies. And of course, like all my clients, he was innocent. And if he was convicted, he was going to go to prison for a long time. And of course, he elected to go to trial. And most trial lawyers would tell you this, that the most anxious moments of a trial are not during the legal proceedings itself. But the most anxious moment is from the time that the jury leaves to go into the jury box to the time they come back with the verdict to hand to the clerk. That is the most anxious moment. And as I look back, I wonder why I had so much anxiety while I was waiting for that pronouncement from the clerk. Because other than the jury deliberating, all anyone was doing was waiting. It should be very relaxing at that point. But part of my anxiety was the anticipation of not knowing the outcome. However, I realized that the major reason there was stifling anxiety was that I had no control of what was going on at the moment. And that lack of control sometimes was directly correlated to that anxiety that we often felt. You know, there's a philosophy called Stoicism, an ancient Greek philosophy, and some people follow it as a spiritual path. It's helpful in helping us overcome that kind of anxiety. You know, the Stoics note that to reduce anxiety is important to make a distinction between what we can control and what we depend upon others to do that is beyond our control. You know, of course, you know, as a trial, as an attorney, has control over trial preparation and researching and developing their arguments and all of that stuff. On the other hand, you have absolutely no control of what the jury does once it enters into that box to deliberate the verdict. And no one has any say-so what they do behind those doors. And the Stoics would say, during that moment where you have no control, let that go. And it will reduce your anxiety. Harder to do than say. Harder to say. Easier said than done. See, I can't even say it. It's so anxious for me. In many of our life experiences, we have control over some of the processes, but we don't have control over the outcomes. As a result, we do the best we can to cover the parts that we have power over, and we should let the rest go. By letting the rest go, we can reduce unnecessary self-inflicted anxiety. You know, if you have a business and you're trying to sign up a client, that may be beyond your control. But creating the best proposal as possible and presenting it in the best way you can, you do have control over. You know, I was thinking about some people who write best-selling books. They can't control whether it's going to be a bestseller or not, but they can control about writing the very best book that they possibly can. You know, in my previous occupation, you know, a lot of my lawyers and friends wanted to, you know, get hired by the faculty at schools. And, you know, they don't have any control over that. You know, somebody in this part of the world, it's great to get hired by Berkeley or Stanford, but that's outside your control. That's the committee has that control. And I think once we make a distinction between what we can control and what we can't, we can release attachment to what we have no say-so in. And as a result, the anxiety level is reduced. You know, as I was trying to summarize, you know, what was being covered by Brené this week in our reading, I recall a story of a young man. He had lost his sense of joy. His life was in a constant state of anxiety. He was doing nothing but working all the time. And he went to a doctor. He was not a psychiatrist, just a doctor. And he said, "Doc, I've come to a dead end. Can you help me?" And the doc said, "I don't know. But let me ask you this question. Where were you happiest as a child?" And he said to the doctor, "I was happiest when I was at the beach. And there was a cottage there that I would go to every time I would go to the beach." And the doctor said to him, "Well, can you follow instructions for one day?" And the young guy said, "Well, I'm desperate, so I'll try anything now." And the doctor told him, "Well, drive to the beach and take a lunch with you. But don't take anything to read. Don't take any music to listen to, you know, in your car. You know, don't take an iPod or your iPhone or whatever the case. Take nothing. Just take yourself." And the doctor gave him 4 prescriptions. He took his pad and he wrote some words on 4 sheets of paper. And he said, "Every 3 hours, at 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and 6 o'clock, I want you to take one of those prescriptions." And the guy thought he was crazy. He said, "You must be joking." And the doctor said, "When you get my bill, you'll see that I'm not joking." So the next day, the young man drove to the beach, and it was quiet. No one was there. And the first prescription at 9 o'clock, he took out, and it simply said, "Listen carefully." And at first, the young guy said, "You must be out of his mind. There's nothing here to listen to. There's no music. I don't have any news I can check out. Nobody's having any conversations. All I hear is the roar of the ocean. All I hear are the seagulls that are flying by and the occasional plane that comes overhead." But after he was there for a while, there was stillness. and his racing thoughts stopped, and his mind came at rest. He kept listening, and after he was listening for a while, it became so still, he began thinking bigger things than himself. He thought about things that he hadn't thought of before, that were beyond his so-called troubles, and he had a great deal of relief. And he relished in that consciousness for a while. In fact, he relished it until it came time for his next prescription at 12 o'clock. And he pulled the second prescription out, and the second prescription said, "Try reaching back." And he thought to himself, "Back? Back for what? Why?" But as he contemplated the question, he suddenly thought back to the abundance of happiness that he had forgotten that was past in his life. And he started thinking back to 20 years ago on his last fishing trip with his brother who had died in a war several years earlier. And he closed his eyes. And as he closed his eyes, he began to see his brother, and he recalled the humor that they had together, the joy that they had together, the playfulness that they had together. And he could see the eagerness in his brother's eyes. And he remembered the time they were fishing and his fishing pole had caught a fish and it was really big and his pole bent so much and they had such a joyous time. And he relished in that for a moment and then in a flash, that memory was gone. But he had reached back and he touched on a moment of happiness. And then it came to 3 o'clock for his third prescription. And up until that point, he said, "Well, these prescriptions from the doctor, they've been pretty easy for me to take." But when he read the third prescription, it caught him off guard. And the third prescription said, "Re-examine your motives." And he got a little defensive in that moment. And he said, "What's wrong with my motives? I'm just trying to be successful. I'm just trying to keep up with the Joneses. I'm just trying to get security and recognition." And there was a small voice in his head that said, "Well, maybe your motives were not so good. Maybe he had lost something along the way. His work had become very calculated and ritualized, and he was focusing only on the rewards. And he's lost his sense of giving something, helping other people, and making a contribution. And he knew at some point that if his motives were not right, if his motives were wrong, nothing else would be right that he did behind that. He realized he had lost his purpose of serving others. And this led to nothing more than overwork, anxiety, and exhaustion. So he re-examined what his motives were. And at the time, his beach spending had come to an end. And he was thinking about what the doctor had given him up until that point. And he said, "Wow, he was really pretty cunning to give me those prescriptions to listen carefully so he can calm his frantic mind and slow it down, to try reaching back and to blot out present worry and touch happiness and joy that he had had in the past, and to re-examine his motives in order to align with his conscious and his higher self." And then it came to 6 o'clock. And he took out his last prescription. And that last prescription simply said this: "Write your troubles in the sand." And he let that last piece of paper prescription kind of blow away. And he picked up a seashell. And he knelt down to the sand. And he began to write his troubles in the sand on top of one another. And then, after he had written them down, he just walked away. He did not look back. He wrote his troubles in the sand, and then the tide came in, and his troubles were washed away. He had tapped into something of the stillness, and his life was so much better after that. So it is. Peace and blessings to you.
We are grateful for the opportunity to share with you today and hope you've taken something from this Sunday's message. If you'd like to hear more from Spiritual Life Center, be sure to click subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening from. You can find out more about our community on our website at www.slcworld.org. We look forward to being a part of your continued spiritual journey. Wherever you are, God is, and all is well. Spiritual